where we bring you thought leaders from around the world so you can share their inspirational stories and empowering practical tools on spirituality, mindset, self-love, being master of your own reality, purpose, business and lifestyle, and so much more. Everything from these beautiful people is so heart-centered and so freaking wise and so damn valuable that people usually pay really big bucks for their coaching. And I bring it to you for free so that you can have the most inspired life possible. So listen ahead for our latest guest, and I'll see you on the other side.
Hello and welcome to another episode of An Inspired Life, where we find freedom and purpose by embracing our divine essence. And we have Tennille Bentley on the show today. She is an author, a speaker, an educator, and honestly, like an all-round consciousness badass. She is incredible. And today we talk about amazing things like consciousness, self-inquiry, how spirituality isn't just about like pretending that we're not human, and how spirituality is also not another form of trying to control our world, but actually about love and compassion. And we talk through some practical tools on how to have that love and compassion, and how to be excited by the times when we're not feeling that, so that we can continue to expand into more of our truth. This is an incredible episode, and I am so excited to share it with you. Thank you, Tennille, for being on the show.
Thank you.
Awesome. It is really, really good to have you here, my love. And I would love to know, how did you start your, I guess, like an awakening journey? How did you start to wake up to all that is around you and the truth of, you know, our consciousness and sound alchemy and all of these beautiful things that you do? How did you start this journey?
Yeah, I think I feel like it's not that we actually have a beginning to this journey. It's almost like we pick up where we left off, you know, we pick up where we left off in our past experiences of our past life, and then we just go through a process of remembering that which we already know. And so for me, it really, I suppose, when it stepped out of subconscious into conscious and the natural inquisition of self was probably around the age of 17. And often a lot of things that happen in our life are, you know, we have these occurrences, and I see this a lot, where, you know, we get brought to our knees, whether it be in trauma or past experiences or adversity. And it's at that moment we get brought to our knees that we actually realize that we surrender. And we surrender in that moment. And when we surrender in that moment, that is the moment that we begin the journey, because what's happened is we've got out of our own way. And when we've gotten out of our own way, what we've been able to do then is open up the possibility language, the realm of, well, what else is possible? And, oh, bless you, darling.
Thank you. There must be such powerful energy flowing through what you're saying. Yes, yes. I have felt so much recently as well. Like, it's surrender, just, it's like every book I read, everyone I talk to at the moment, everything seems to be about surrender. And my journey of realizing that I was here on, I guess, a path of opening rather than a path of just creating in like a this is exactly how it should be way. The time that I switched was when I had a breakup that really like shocked me. I was the one who ended it, but I was like surprised. I did never could have believed that my path would be without him. So yeah, those days that I spent crying and journaling, or the, you know, way too long that I spent sitting at the bottom of the shower crying, they were the days when I just had to believe that it was all happening perfectly and look around for how that could be. And it's so true that once we stop just trying to like follow this plan that was implanted in us as we were being raised of like who we needed to be in our lives, and we start to open up, that's when we find the magic in this lifetime. Yeah. So
it's often in the darkest moments that we find the brightest of awareness pieces, and it's because we have broken down. But my thing to humanity is, why do we have to get to that point? to wake up. Why not? Let's do it consciously now in the inquisition of self and going through the path of self-inquiry without us having to be at the point of desperation to open up to the universe, open up to God, open up to whatever it is that, you know, the greater spirit that be, and whatever people want to call it. You know, it's just, it's for me, it's like I'm at a point in my life where it's like I don't want to be at a point of trauma or a point of brought to my knees of desperation to have that awakening, that spiritual awakening they call it. You know, Brené Brown says breakdown, spiritual break. She said nervous breakdown, aka spiritual awakening. Mm. But I think that it's about how do we begin that journey without the need or desire to be at such a point, because we as humans are, you know, I feel like we're kindergarten kids fumbling through consciousness, and it's kind of like we're trying to figure our way out, you know, we're trying to figure it out as we go. And it's kind of like if we just found the point of surrender, and it starts with query. It starts with query of self. It starts with query of what thoughts are yours and what are thoughts are other people. And the query of self begins to unravel that subconscious patterning in the architecture of our mind that is really built into us at a young age, at a blueprint in a way to distract us from our essence. So, yeah.
Wow. Yes. I wrote an article last year, I think, about how we don't notice, like say if we're walking barefoot on the sand, it's like we won't even notice the sand until we step on something sharp and then we pay full attention to that. And if we had noticed the sand all the way along and we're feeling it, maybe we wouldn't have had to step on something sharp to bring our awareness to like the beauty of the sand. If we paid more attention to all of what is around us, then maybe we don't have to get to those extremes before we start to be like, hang on, actually I want to shift, like hang on, there's a turning point, like a massive turning point. Yeah, because you didn't notice like the little ways that you could have done it like more gently before that. So I love this. I'm so excited to be talking about this. And there's still like, it's something that I've been, you know how you have like ideas taught over here and then ideas taught over here, and so I remember people telling me like I'm not special, as in like in a spiritual sense, like none of us are special, we're all the same, and then also saying like we are special or we are important. And I grappled with that a lot, and then I came to the realization that all of us are important but not special, because all of us are important. That's what like my thing was about it, and that is what I'm doing at the moment, is grappling with this awareness about paradox. yeah the paradox about there is so much growth and expansion and like the brutalness of life. And Glennon Doyle Melton calls life brutal, both brutal and beautiful. Try saying all of that without screwing that up somehow. But that's exactly what I'm feeling in my life at the moment, is the brutalness of it. And so there is so much brutalness in the chaos and the challenge and all of that stuff. And we're kind of used to that. I think we've had centuries of humans, like we've figured out how to grow through suffering. And then I'm like, okay, let's try. Can we look over here? Can there be a way that we grow without having to go to that? And then is that an idea and like maybe not even reality? So I'm really excited to talk with you about that. So do you feel like we could maybe skip so much of that like shit down the other end?
Yeah, look, I think if we look at the state of consciousness and we look at what it is it when it's in its essence, it's nothing. It's everything and it's nothing. And when we step into the world of polarity, which is what we are born into, so we've got the polarity, that means there's movement, the yin and the yang, you know, so there's movement, there's shifting going on in this experience. And in order for us to have that shifting, you know, that therein lies the lesson in the polarity of life. And so I feel like it still needs to be a part of this experience, because that's what we've created in the quantum intelligence, is that this is the conscious experience we've created in a world of polarity, because without polarity, there'd be no movement. Without the movement, there'd be nothing. So we need movement and shift and vibration at a cellular level to create the magnificence that is us. So we know that in order to have that shift and vibration, then therefore there needs to be polarity. So in the world of polarity, then how do we sit in the heart of the paradox of that? When it's loving someone so much that you don't need them, sitting in the heart of that paradox, how do we find that? And this is a real, it can really play with your head, because what's happening is it's actually got nothing to do with your head. The moment we're in our head is we've lost the ability to be in our hearts. And so in many respects, we need to lose our minds in order to find our hearts and in order to find that space. And so what happens is in my opinion, I think what we can do differently, we still have the polarity, but we choose how it is that we show up with that experience. So in the suffering or in the pain or in the, and again, these are all perceived emotions that we attach to a story that is neutral anyway. We are putting the label that it's painful because it feel we're attaching it to the emotion, to the thought, and the thoughts come from a collective consciousness that we've all created, and that we then tap into that at a certain frequency. Because we're at that frequency, we get that thought. So if we're feeling pain and suffering, we're thinking pain and suffering, we're going to have that frequency. I call it cosmic algorithms. So a little bit like Facebook algorithms, you know, it starts to look at the back data of what we're projecting out. It's the same thing that happens when we're projecting out what we're feeling. So yes, this perceived pain that we're going through, I think that it is, how do we start to change our perception to the polarity that we live in, to be able to then not be affected by the two total opposites? And that's my practice, in my whole life practice, is how do I stay in the middle of that? And you look at the great Buddhist teachings, you know, they say that there's this level of emotions, right? So you can for them, their practice is how do we stay constant in that middle and not go too happy that we're extreme, because when you're extreme, then you crash and then you go really, really sad, and you go really, really happy and then really, really sad. And the key is finding that place in the middle where I can still, no matter what experience comes in my life, I'm still here. I'm still here. I'm still here. And if that is the ability to do that, then it won't matter what perceived pain or suffering we have, because we can sit still in the middle of the chaos. And in the depths of the chaos is where the brilliance actually occurs, because it distracts this human noggin of ours. It gets in the way of everything.
Yes. Wow. You like give out wisdom, honestly, like they're Tic Tacs in that. Like you say something and I'm like, that could be a quote. Wow. That's amazing. And something that I actually have, I'm so glad you said that, because it feels like that paradox is slowly gleaming together inside of me. Because I am like, have just recently separated from my partner, and I was like, you know, I've been doing all of the right things. Like, why do I have to create this suffering? And then I realized that the only reason it felt like suffering is because I was choosing for it to feel like suffering. And that if I saw it as like, you know, we've both received all that we can receive in this relationship right now, and now we're letting each other go and releasing each other to go off and be like more amazing creatures for having met each other, then that is a gift for both of us and not something that we need to feel sad about. And believe me, like my human version, she feels sad about it.
Oh yeah.
Still. Yeah. Like, you know, and I've allowed that, and I'm so comfortable with allowing that now. When I first started like a month ago, I wasn't that great at it. I was trying to transcend it. like it wasn't really working out for me. But yeah, I can see that now. It's about letting our human feel that, and also recognizing that if we shift things around, we can see the exact same experience. Like my dog died in December, exact same experience. How can you feel all of that and honor all of what you're feeling, but not get caught up in it and not see it as like a punishment or suffering, but just something that's happening, and something that's happening so that you can maybe learn unconditional love. Like even if they're not here, you can love them, so that maybe you can learn patience or compassion and you know, see it as gifts rather than, so what I guess what I'm trying to say is I love that you're saying it's not the physical events that are happening outside of us, but our perspective of them that can reduce the suffering, so that we can be in a state of like contentment more.
It's about it's really about how do we not let there are three core areas that Dr. Joe Dispenza talks about: environment, body, and time. And when we consciously give into those three areas, we lose the aspect of being, if you like. And so if we give into and it's perfectly human nature. I'm in exactly the same boat as you are right now, which is quite interesting and synchronistic that we're talking.
Everyone I meet at the moment is separating from a partner.
Well, it's a lot of there's a lot of shifting at the moment going on at a massive level, collective level, and I'm seeing it a lot as well. But I think, you know, the thing is that we've got to be careful in this journey of the human self versus the conscious self versus the oneness self, is that we don't want to misinterpret our hurt of the wounded self being that's meant to be our true path. You see, in that moment of us feeling the hurt and feeling the separation, that's very much the human need, the human desire. And often what can happen is our head can look at that and go, I'm hurting so much, therefore I must be off track. Like, that's not feeling right, or something's not right there. Maybe I'm meant to be back there. Maybe I'm meant to be. And the story, the ego self, will continually keep us on a path of forever seeking and never finding. So we begin the seeking of this question of, is this it? And then we what happens is we end up then attracting back in from our wounded self. So it's about the micro stuff. It's about every little thought that we're having. And I do this with myself. So when I'm in my wounded self, my little girl, because the biggest fear for women is abandonment. The biggest fear for men is being smothered. And so when we stop looking outward for the need or desire to not be abandoned and to be loved, we then begin the journey inward. When we can start to disconnect from that and see it outside of ourselves, that begins the unraveling process of this. And we can actually begin the process of, because what happens, it goes from the subconscious to the conscious because we're now aware of it. So we can unravel what this is, this seeking outward for love and seeking outward for, and the fear of abandonment, which is a grand scale, it's biggest fear for women. And that's why when we're in relationships, there's a clash of values, because we fear abandonment, so we smother, and they fear being smothered, so they run away. You know, so it's like, you know, no wonder there's a clash in men and women in relationships. And it's just, how do you find the balance and the dance of that, you know, with the masculine? It's really, there's not two of you in the relationship. There's four of you. You've got your masculine and feminine, and masculine and feminine, both healthy and unhealthy, that play out, and it's the polarity of those two. And so when we actually begin to understand, well, hang on, okay, I'm crying about this, I'm feeling the human emotion, I'm letting it go through me, and I feel so much hurt and so much pain and so much loss from this, that my little girl is just scared. That's the moment where we say, the conscious self, the little higher voice goes, okay, this is just, let this move through you. Everything has a beginning, a middle, and an end, but this does not mean that you're meant to go back. This does not mean that that's the path you're going to. So don't confuse what's authentic for you and whether you're coming from your wounded self or you're coming from your higher self. We always know when we're coming from our higher self, the simplest way to know is, do I feel lighter or do I feel heavier? And you just feel into it. Do I feel lighter with this? And you think about it and you're like, yeah, I feel lighter when I'm away. And then, do I feel heavier with this when I think about being back? Well, yeah, I feel heavier. And so when you get so confused on the which way do I go scenario, which a lot of us get faced with, whether it's relationships or life, the easiest way to do it is to just feel whether it feels lighter or whether it feels heavier. And then that can be a really good indicator while we're having all the chaos going on in our brains.
And because often I can feel the listeners. It's like they sit as this entity next to me. Like, I can feel them in like a circle energy right next to me, and I can almost feel them go, so you want me to make big life decisions just based on lighter or heavier? So can you talk some more about that? How has that played out in your life?
Well, my journey has been a pretty interesting journey, and as is everybody else's. But my story per se is that, you know, I've built multi-million-dollar businesses, I've built global charities, I've had awards from the Prime Minister, I've been inducted by the Governor. So all these things that are perceived by society as, you know, being successful, I built a lot of business success. Mm-hmm. And for me, the where it helped me was intuition, like tuning into how I felt about that. I got too caught up when at the peak of my business, I was very much in my masculine and driving from logic and reason and making a profit, and that didn't serve me. And so my life changed dramatically after that. But your biggest decisions, and the question is there's a great book called Malcolm Gladwell's Blink, and it's the moment, that split second, that blink moment. In one blink, you already know the answer. The thing is we fool ourselves. This is the thing, like we complicate life, we complicate our responses, we complicate the situation when we already knew what it was in the first blink of that moment, because our intuition knows. And that's what I say. I wrote a piece on this the other day, and it was like, you already know the answer. So when people come to me and ask me questions, and it's sometimes I'll be able to help guide them through that, but other times I'm like, you already know. But you know, it's that moment where you're like, when you're asking yourself, how do I feel about this, or what is, or whatever the question is, it's that millisecond moment before your head gets in the way. That is your knowing. That is your intuition. And it's by no mistake that we have three, you know, nervous systems, or three nerve systems in our, like, brains, literally three brains in our body. We've got the mind, we've got the heart, and we've got the gut. And it's shown through science that they're actually neurocenters, like brains, all three of them. So they each have their own thinking processes that go with that. And our gut is often the one that is our intuition. So, you know, you hear people say, oh, my gut feel is da 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 da. And it's that split second. So, yes, massive life decisions. Okay, balance it with a bit of logic. So I do that. And the way that I do that is check in with those three brain centers, because sometimes we can go off like the fluffy stuff and make so-called, you know, fluffy decisions. And I'm very much a business person, but also very much in the spiritual world as well. And so it's, how do you balance the two? And it's, first of all, tuning in with the instinct. So you go to your gut, or you go to your heart, and you check in with your heart. How does it feel? And then you go to your head, and the head goes, okay, well, what's the logic behind this? And then you check back in with your heart, and you check back in with your gut. Now, there's this process, there's an actual process of this called M-braining. And it's, so you can look that up or Google it. But yeah, it shows you, how do you make decisions? Making sure that you've checked in with all centers. If it's a big decision, check in with all centers. And I am a big believer of that, of making sure that we do have that check-in point, because sometimes, yeah, we can make flippant decisions off the fly and it's not logical, and we forget that we're actually human and we've got responsibilities. You know, so yeah, so it's important to also balance the two.
Yeah, it's like, yes, I want to gift myself a day at the day spa today, but I actually also have these other commitments that I can't shift today. And I think that if you really need to gift yourself a day at the day spa, that you maybe can shift them. But yeah, I think it's important to go, hang on a sec, could we just do it tomorrow maybe? Like, there's
I think we've got to be, the thing that's very, we've got to be very careful with in this space of consciousness, of the institutionalization of spirituality per se. You know, I think what we need to be very mindful of is not being off with the fairies. I think, you know, and I say that with the most respect, because I've seen so many people in this space go off with the fairies and actually forget that we're in the human. And I've done it myself. You know, I've been so off the other end, and I'm like, I don't want to be in this human experience. I want to be over there. I love it. It's awesome over there. And it's like, well, hang on, we chose this experience. As much as I always say to my friends, my sort of, you know, conscious friends, I say to them, I don't know what drugs I was on when I chose this experience, but, you know, I'm going to go back and complain to management. But you know, it's like understanding that we are still very much human. We are very much in this low frequency state and a high frequency being. So we've got to find the dance between the two, or else we go too far to the extreme and we lose connection with what we are here to do. I mean, there's only a fair few of us that can sit on a mountain and meditate to bring peace to the world. The rest of us here need to do something and undo a lot of the crap that we've done for our next generation. You know, like, we need to be working on this now and doing things like this, having formats like this to have the discussion, to have the dialogue, is exactly what the world needs right now.
So what do you think are the most important things for the world to know or experience or transform right now?
I think probably transforming, the one thing, like, we're all on this journey of self, which we hear a lot now, you know, go inwards. And look, I'm a fan of that, but I think one thing we need to have knowledge about, or wisdom around, go inwards, but don't let this become spiritual narcissism. You know, that we're like, oh, I forgot about all you. I'm going inwards. Okay, well, that's your shit. That's not mine. You know, then that's where we start to discount everybody's stuff, you know. And I think to myself, that's not true, the true essence of that journey of self. The journey of self into the heart, which we are all on, and I do encourage, but also have the spatial awareness of those around you. We are sharing this environment with other people. It doesn't mean we have to discount or be rude to people or be rude to our neighbours. You know, we're the only species in the world that are successfully killing ourselves off. So we really need to be doing something different. And it starts with self, but it starts with self without ego. Because there's so much ego I see in this industry, so much ego I see in other industries. But it's like, how do we do it from a place of being disconnected from ego, still go within, still center self, not be self-centered, but center self enough with the spatial awareness of everything else around us and not just go, I'm going inwards, you know?
Oh, I love that.
So that would be
so much. Yeah. Do you know what?
That would be amazing.
good. I just feel like what I'm getting recently through my own self-inquiry from this like transition out of my relationship is that spirituality is this thing that I thought I could use to almost avoid suffering and to control my life around me. So I was doing the exact same thing that I was doing before I found spirituality, but I was just doing it in a spiritual way now. And I was still like, I mean, I'm human, right? So as much as I've released some of my judgments, I still judge. I still judge myself. I still have really high standards for myself. All of these things. And it's like I just picked all of my own shit up and put it into a spirituality box and thought I was being spiritual. Still were like, if you do this, you are good. If you do this, you are bad. But it was just like spiritual versions of that rather than the stuff that I was taught when I was a child. So I think that is really important, changing the conversation from, you know, what does, like, you must go inside and you must be a vegetarian and you must meditate for a certain amount of hours. Changing the conversation from all of those, like an extra layer of musts and shoulds into how can you just become the most loving, compassionate, effective, like human and soul all in one in this world. I love that. It feels like you're really shifting the conversation around that. That's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. And I think it's, you know, it's also a querying. We're either coming from love or fear. Those are the only two base levels that we're coming from. So when we are in fear, we're not love. And it's just, how do I get shift? If it's on a simple level for people, it's like, well, put spirituality or the labels associated with that and the sort of belief systems around that, shift that to the side and let's just look at the two base levels and how do I show up in those levels. So when am I in a relationship or in a meeting or in a conversation, watch myself, be the observer of my experience and see how it is, where am I coming from with this conversation? Am I coming from fear? Do I want to be loved? Do I want to be accepted? Is that why I'm like pushing my voice forward and wanting to be heard? Or am I sitting quietly and being really comfortable in that space and hearing what's happening around me and then speaking when I'm called forward to speak and knowing that intuition and tuning into that and going intuitively, you know, I think if the world stopped talking so much, and I think talking is important, but if we, you know, it is a balance between knowing when you're called forth, like this platform, I'm called forth to share this information. So I'll talk to the cows come home, but then I can be in a boardroom environment or I can be in a lunch environment. And then sometimes I'll tune in and it's like, no, I can be quiet today. I don't need to voice my opinion. And it's just, how do we start to find that dance between the two and where are we coming from, the love or the fear? And anytime we're in fear, we're not in love because you can't have both. You can only have one or the other. So that would be something I think is about watching that. How am I showing up in everything that I do? Daily self-inquiry.
Yes, I feel like as soon as you said that, I mean, I knew the love and fear thing, but just this idea dropped in to go into my journal each night and have it as part of my closing questions. How did love show up today? And how did fear show up today? Just so that I could go, okay, so I thought that was love at the time, but actually I think that was fear. And that, yeah. You know, I think it's in Buddhism that they say that you can kill someone with a good intent and you can save someone's life with like a poor intent. I don't know, whatever they use to label those intents. But it, you know, it's not the decision and the choice and the action, but the energy behind it. Like in a boardroom, for someone speaking up is like loving themselves enough to know that they're worthy to speak up. And then yeah. for someone else, it could be loving themselves enough to know they don't have to prove themselves by saying anything and they can sit there and be quiet. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Beautiful. Oh my God. Yeah. You are incredible. This is so much fun.
Oh, thank you.
My gosh. So you're just like a bundle of wisdom that is just coming out of everywhere. It's awesome.
Oh well, it's not. I can't take all the credit for it.
We set the intention that
it's the collective.
yes, I love that. So, what are some of like the biggest things that you like tools maybe that you wish that other people knew in terms of clearing fear so that they can be in love more often? What are some of the actual like practical tips, tools, strategies that you could share with us?
Absolutely. Well, I think one of the biggest questions that I like to pose to people is, who are you when nobody's looking? What kind of person am I when there is nobody around? How do I react? What are my micro expressions to things? How do I, a glass drops, do I get annoyed? Do I get this? And it's okay. There is no right or wrong. It's just noticing now. It's going, well, how am I showing up to myself when I think no one's looking, but now there is because you're looking at you, you know, but it's that observation piece of, yeah, who am I when nobody is looking? And then it's also about seeing the opportunities for where you can practice love, searching for them. Find them out, seek them out, whether it's telling someone they look beautiful today, whether it's just, you know, giving someone your parking, you know, your parking, not ticket, but, you know, parking pay, paying for your, somebody else's parking, you know, or if it's like, if it's just, it's finding the opportunities to practice this on a daily basis, micro opportunities. It could be tiny, like things that, you know, get up like, no, like bother you, is a really great indication of what charges you, what charges your shadow self. The things that charge us are the things that are within us. So when we get charged by something that somebody else external does, that is your, I call them cosmic breadcrumbs. They give them to us all the time. They're there everywhere. And we're like little rabbits following them. And then sometimes we don't find them and then we're going this way. But if you tune into that path and you can see the cosmic breadcrumbs that are before you, which are in the experiences, everyday experiences that you have, it's a breadcrumb. It's a gold nugget. And it's like, so that happens when you see someone or you experience someone that bothers you or annoys you or you don't get. Or you're like, you know, you could be all spiritual and go, oh, they're totally not on my frequency. But that's just, again, you know, spiritual, like spiritual banter. But it's not about that. To me, I look at that and I get rubbed up the wrong way, or I find someone that I feel really uncomfortable around. I'm like, okay, great. This is good. This means that they're charging me. They're bothering me. Something in them is bothering me, which means that that something in that same form is within me. Because if it wasn't, it wouldn't bother me. If it does not matter, it does not matter. It doesn't come up in our consciousness to start with. So, and that can be a hard pill to swallow for some people, because they're like, well, that person's really rude and I'm a really nice person. Yes, but where the self-inquiry piece, this journey is not a fluffy jump on a unicorn and love the world kind of journey, whilst I love unicorns. But, you know, it is really looking at the true, honest, brutal truth of self and looking at that person that charges you and going, how, okay, they're rude, they're aggressive, they're this, they're that. Great. Get excited about that, because that is your gold nugget. That is your window into your soul to then go, well, if that charges me because it bugs me, then there's something in there that charges me. You see, and I got to a point where I was able to desensitize from people that were aggressive. And I grew up in a life that was, you know, deemed adverse. It was domestic violence. So in my life, it's like that would have triggered me a lot. Whereas now I'm at the point where that aggression doesn't trigger me. In fact, I have to try not to laugh because I kind of, you know, I find it amusing now. Like I'm like, oh, that's really interesting because I see their inner child. I don't see the adult version of the confused self, that stuff that's playing out for them. And the thing is the reality point there for each of us is when you can reach a point through desensitization that it doesn't bother you, you have now plugged that hole. That hole no longer gets charged. Doesn't matter who comes into your life or who leaves your life. To me, that's the ultimate. For me, it's like I want to get to a point, and a lot of our great teachers are at that point, where it doesn't matter what their external environment says or does or is. It does not trigger them. It does not affect them. You know, yes, they're going to still be human and have judgment and have this and have that, because that's our human experience. Even the greatest leaders of our times and gurus all have, you know, some of them have had judgments and things like that. So it's, so it's, you know, I think it was Sri Chinmoy who does, I did some teachings with through his sort of ashram or through his teachings. And even, you know, even he said there's judgments from time to time. And it's like, if we can allow ourselves to be human, but then also see those opportunities of things that bug us about being human, the people that annoy us, that is where we step into love, because we're not now pointing at them. We're looking at us. They come to us with a platter served for us to look into our soul because they bug us or something about them is really, you know, rubs us up the wrong way. And that gives us the opportunity to look at that, to then get to a point where it won't. And then we are in love.
And so then how do you, once you recognize that that's inside of you, how do you desensitize that part of you? So if you recognize, for example, that you are capable of being, I don't know, arrogant or rude or something that is considered as a negative trait, how do you get to the point where you're okay with someone else being rude nearby you and it doesn't trigger that for you?
Yeah. Well, it depends. You can either do you know, your own work on it, but I tend to be the kind of person, and I think it only suits certain people that are prepared to do this, but you just expose yourself to it more and more. Not too much where you're not safe, you know, where you're not safe at all, but you don't go out and seek it. But what you do is you then get excited about the opportunity, because there's so many people, we're always going to bump into people that we might get triggered by. So when that trigger comes up from that experience, instead of, you know, you get excited about it and you change your perception to that. And the very nature of changing the perception to it begins the desensitization process, because you're already in a place of query. You're already in a place of, oh, wow, okay, they're really annoying me. Awesome, let me look at this. And it's still, you're still going to have moments where you're like, you know, you're going to feel human and you're going to walk away and go, oh, but it's a constant question of how do I find that within myself? And then what we do is we go through a process looking in the mirror and hands on heart, and that piece that is us. So, okay, and we say the statement, I love that I can be egotistical and loud. I love that I can be egotistical and loud and all parts of me. But then you do the opposite in the positive traits. And I love that I can be loving and compassionate or whatever it might be. And we learn to love those parts within ourselves and have compassion for those parts within ourselves, because then we can have compassion for that within other people. It allows us to do that. So the journey again within self is where we find that answer.
Yeah, powerful. And just, I know that for me, I was like, how can you love egotistical for a second there? And then I know that things that I've done in the past that have been really helpful on a more mental level is just going, where would egotistical be a good thing? Like, how could I see that characteristic could be a positive in my life in certain scenarios and situations? And it can even out the mental understanding of the particular trait or characteristic.
Well, something that I have done in that, in you know, getting okay with that trait, is I've actually sometimes it's good to see the ego as another character, as another person, and understanding and almost talking to it like it's another you, and it's starting to understand why it was there in the first place, and saying to it like out loud to yourself when you're not in front of everyone else. But, you know, saying to it out loud that I understand that you were here to protect me. I understand you're just trying to do your job, but you're no longer needed. It's no longer required, but thank you and I love you. And that's where we can step into having more compassion and understanding that where that maybe egotistical person is coming from, they are only, and this is the baseline of everything, they are only coming from a place of being wanting to be loved and accepted. They're articulating it through a very poor form, but they're doing it because that's all they want, is to be loved and accepted. You see, people who are the aggressive ones, who are the bullies, perceived bullies, usually as a child in their younger years, they call the terrible twos because they spiritually have begun the process of becoming their own spiritual entity. Before that, they thought they were their parent. So they start to learn, they start to acquire survival instincts. And often those kind of children have had the parents that have said, don't cry, shush. So they've equated vulnerability and weakness with not being loved and accepted. So you fast forward that into their adult life, put them into a boardroom as a big boss, and they come in and they're totally bully, bully, bully. Or you're in a relationship and you feel like they're totally bully, bully. They're just wanting to be loved and accepted because they believe that vulnerability and weakness equals not being loved and accepted. And that is blueprinted into their mind. So it doesn't mean we need to accept it. It doesn't mean it's right for us. And it doesn't mean that it's like, you know, for you, you've got to decide and feel into what feels right. Like, do you stand up for that? And do you feel passionate enough to say, I'm drawing my boundary here, you're being a bully? Mm. or do you just look at them and go, nice to know you. I'm going to take the path of least resistance, and I'm going that way. Yeah. As Abraham Hicks says, you know, the path of least resistance, follow the joy. And it's your call how you deal with that. I don't believe we need to fight hate with hate. I don't believe we need to fight bullying with being bullied or you know, being aggressive back. For me, I've practiced and in the most, I would say, extreme cases, I've been able to practice love in a very opposite environment, and it doesn't happen and transform at the time, but over time I've seen it have impact on a collective consciousness level and the ripple effect. So yeah,
Dina, I love so much what you said about looking at the other person and knowing that they just are doing whatever action they're doing because they want to be loved and accepted. And in NLP they teach you that in terms of mediation, if you have two people with opposing views, that if you keep asking them, but why do you want that? Or why do you want that? You keep going up and up and up. You get to one thing that both of them want that they can agree on. And then you can work back down to find like actions or whatever that suit both parties. But just that was the first thing that popped into my head. Like, yeah, if I can look at someone else and go, okay, you want to be loved and accepted, that's why you're doing that. I want to be loved and accepted, that's why I'm doing this. Surely we can find a way to work this out. Like, surely I can find a way to love and accept you in this moment, because it's all I've ever wanted as well.
And well, the reality is you can still love and accept someone from a distance if they're intolerable and they're off in their own path. Like, you don't have to love and accept them in that environment. You can be like, you know, you're a douche. I'm going this way. but you can still also have love and acceptance for them at a distance. I think it's also finding that balance between that compromising your soul's integrity is what I like to call it. Now, where is the line between compromising our soul's integrity and compassion? Do we practice compassion so much that we actually put to the side our own integrity, our own values, our own soul's integrity and worth? That's the moment where it is not true practice. The true practice is also loving self enough to know what my boundaries are and what works for me and what I want in my world and my reality, and making those boundaries to be able to know that this is my self-worth now. This is diving into what I believe I'm worthy of versus, you know, having compassion and taking things lying down.
Mm-hmm. Mm, love it. I feel like you and I could keep talking forever, and that people, like everyone listening, would just keep listening because it's so valuable. Yeah. But we have actually come to, like, we need to close up, which is crazy. I'm sure people will still want to keep talking to you. How can they come and find you, Tennille?
Yeah, easy. They can just either tennillebentley.com, so it's Tennille Bentley, Ley.com, or they can just find me on all social media. So, you know, when I talked about my multi-million-dollar business, it was a social media agency, so I'm everywhere on social media. So it's like Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, or YouTube, whatever, all under Tennille Bentley. So
thank you so much for coming to share your wisdom and your energy with us today. It's been amazing.
It's a blessing. Thank you so much for actually creating the platform to allow this dialogue to even have taken place. So your gift to the world is a priceless one. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you so much to the listeners, because if you didn't show up for yourselves in this way by listening to this podcast, then none of this would be possible. And every time that I do a podcast interview beforehand, we set an intention through prayer. And I just am so grateful that I get to have these conversations and give them to you. So thank you for doing your own self-inquiry and I guess wading through the muck in some sense of it for yourself, and it serves the world as you do that. So thank you. If you have enjoyed this podcast and you would like to know more about Tennille, she and I are about to head over to do a secret episode together. I found myself at one point in this podcast pausing because I was like, nope, that's a secret episode question. So I know there can be really juicy stuff in there. I feel like I want to know how this beautiful woman got to be so incredibly loving and passionate. So let's find out her habits and rituals behind the scenes. You can do that by heading to aninspiredlife.com.au/secret. And if you've enjoyed this, please share with other people. Like, just by sharing this podcast, you can make a difference to the people in your life and help us to raise the consciousness of, you know, humanity, not a small task. So we could use your help. So please share or rate the podcast on iTunes and give us a review as well. That would be awesome. And if you want to join the conversation, so Tennille and I will be available to answer any questions. If you want to join the conversation, you can go to facebook.com/groups/lightworkersrising and find the podcast with both our beautiful faces on it and come and tell us, like, what one action are you going to implement? What one shift in perspective or focus are you going to do from having listened to this podcast? And tell us how it's going for you. I would love to, hear your feedback. So thank you everyone for listening, and I will see you next week if we don't see you at the secret episode.
You have been listening to the An Inspired Life podcast with me, Kiara O'Leary. I'm so excited to be guiding you on your own journey of living your own version of an inspired life. Head over to aninspiredlife.com.au if you want access to more inspiring stories, tips, tools, frameworks, anything that I can possibly give you that will help you live a more fulfilling life. I put on there, and so much of it is free. And there's also empowering life solutions, from how to make your breakup the best thing that ever happened to you, to the Sacred Business Academy, taking it from an idea to your life's work in only 11 weeks. So I hope you can head on over to aninspiredlife.com.au and find something that will help you and guide you for where you're at right now. Thank you. My name's Kiara again, and I am so grateful to be guiding you on this journey. See you next time.